Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, September 11, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Sorch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is resting because he had a stressful, well, a good but stressful, intense weekend. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. How am I feeling today? Today is a good day. I'm feeling pretty good. I went for a short bike ride, climbed a few hills, came back, and I'm doing the show. Ron is busy because this past weekend was the cyclocross race, and he had the race yesterday. It's as early as it's ever been since I've known him, and now it's like he can enjoy the fall and kick back. And if he goes to cyclocross races, he's going to go to other people's cyclocross races. So if you don't know what cyclocross is, so you know what cross country is, right? Cross country running races are where you're running, you're not running on a track, you're running out in nature and stuff. So a cyclocross race is a short course, and it usually has obstacles, and it's frequently in nature, it's on grass, it has obstacles like there can be barriers that you have to jump over, just wooden barriers, and it can also go down steep embankments, up off camber surfaces, around trees, in the woods, into sand, down by the waterside, and Mansfield Hollow just has all of that. So Ron runs that race. He's been running it for approximately 40 years, with a few years off, for the past 40 years, but some years he took off, but this year was definitely on. And they put it early this year, and he was concerned that because it was early, they wouldn't have enough takers, but that didn't happen. It went very well. The weather was absolutely gorgeous on Sunday, and it was gorgeous and sunny, a light breeze, low humidity, high 60s, low 70s, just perfect weather. It didn't have that autumnal look because it's really kind of still summer. So usually I'm used to cyclocross there being, you know, crunchy leaves, and the leaves are changing, and there's a lot of orange and gold and stuff, and that there wasn't any of that. It was very green. So it was a very green cyclocross race, and did really well even early season. So we're excited. So I'm really proud of him for putting on such an exciting event. I was the podium girl. I handed out the prizes, and helped out a bit, and it was just an exciting day. So he's exhausted from that, so he will make his show tomorrow. And so he's resting now. It's good. And he had to go and teach an early morning spin class as usual. So anyway, so he's feeling exhausted from that, and a little sore and achy and stuff, and it takes him longer to get over sore and achy since taking the medicine that he took back in earlier this year and last year. So for me, I'm having a good day. I didn't feel so great last Thursday, and felt very tired, and I was going to lead a ride up to Southbridge, but didn't wind up doing it. And then I felt better on Saturday, and I did a short ride. So, and then today felt pretty good, got out, and it was very cool. It was the first day I wore long sleeves and knickers outside, on my bike this part of the season. I mean, obviously I did it earlier this year, but this is the first time that it was so cool this morning. I had to wear long sleeves, you know, since, you know, like April or May. It's getting cool. We are going to have some rising temperatures next weekend. It's supposed to be hot again. So it'll be hot for a while, and then it'll get cool again eventually. I'm having to take my lime herbs ongoing. I had cut back on them, and then I was scolded by my friend and colleague Mariah Hinchy. She said, you have to take your herbs for like a year, and then you have to have 2 months symptom free. So I'm back on them, and mostly I'm okay. I had one bad night last week, and otherwise I've been all right. working on the blood pressure. Last night I took the Chinese formula pills that I was taking, and I took the pill form because I found that the taking the tea along with everything else was just too much for me. So I took the pills, and I feel pretty good this morning, like I said. So I'm going to continue to work on that, see if I can manage my blood pressure without without taking a pharmaceutical. So far, so good. There's something I learned. I just found in, you know, poking around, there's something called, it's a paused or regulated breath. And it's a breath where you breathe in for 6 seconds and breathe out for 6 seconds, which means you're going to do 5 breaths per minute. I think it's something like that. And so you breathe in for 6 seconds and out for 6 seconds, and you just keep doing that. And it's supposed, if you practice this for a few minutes every day, 5 to 10 minutes every day, supposedly, you can ultimately lower your blood pressure. And my understanding and what I have understood is that that rate, breathing in for 6 seconds and out for 6 seconds, it correlates with your baroreceptors. It's how your baroreceptors reset. And I found, if you want to try this, you can find YouTube videos or you can find apps that will do this 6 second. Just put in, if you want to search on it, put in 6 second breathing, and you'll find something that will do that for you. It'll help you stay on track. And I found one that's just a little circle that opens up for 6 seconds and closes down for 6 seconds. And it says inside of it, breathe in, breathe out. And you just follow it. And then what happens is your body gets the sense of the rhythm of that 6 seconds in and 6 seconds out. And you kind of memorize it. And then you're able to do it without looking at the app. So I found that that was very useful. I mean, I'll probably use the app or the video again. But it's a very simple thing you can do, and it's another way that you can help to lower your blood pressure. Of course, I'm doing yin yoga and restorative yoga, and while you're doing that, you're doing a lot of deep breathing. I'm not necessarily paying attention to how long my in and out breaths are, but it might be worth it to do that focused 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out. I mean, I lay around in the evening, you know, looking at video games or watching TV or reading a book, I could do it while I'm doing that. So I will probably wind up doing that. That's very interesting. I don't know if I said this last week, I tried hibiscus tea, and I'm apparently very sensitive to hibiscus. If I have a whole cup of brewed hibiscus tea where I have a teaspoon that I have brewed overnight, and then I drink a cup of that before bed, it knocks me out. And I wake up the next morning feeling like I can't get out of bed. So it's too much for me. And some people, when they drink hibiscus, it's too much. So what I could do is have a little bit of it instead of having a cup, have a quarter of a cup and see if that works for me. I have a friend who's making hibiscus tincture. And so I could have drop doses of that and see if that works for me. But hibiscus is very powerful. I had no idea. And it depends on the person, how intensely they're going to respond to it. But I responded a lot. And it seems like things that enhance GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid, which is it's a neurotransmitter, that's an inhibitory neurotransmitter. I seem to be real sensitive to things that promote GABA. So ashwagandha or taurine or glycine or too much of other nervines tend to knock me out too much. One thing that I have been experimenting with is L-theanine. And I really like L-theanine because it seems to calm me down without knocking me out, and it makes me cheery. Sometimes I will do, I'm back and forth with the low dose lithium, and the low dose lithium orotate is something that seems to cheer me up. I'm a little concerned that it knocks me down too much, but I may go back to trying that again. But lithium orotate seems to make me cheery. So does the L-theanine. And the other thing that seems to calm me down without absolutely knocking me out is CBD, cannabidiol. And I have some cannabidiol that I've accumulated in the last little while. And when I'm done with that, I'll probably head over to our local dispensary and see if I can get some good CBD there. You know, people like to take the gummies. I don't know if I'll try THC because THC tends to knock me out too much. And I don't like the feeling of being high, but CBD seems to be relaxing. without making me high. And of course, if you need THC for some reason, like there's some application, whether you need it for sleep or anxiety or pain, when you get the right blend with CBD, you get THC with CBD, then you can tolerate the THC more. CBD tends to calm down the effects of THC, so you don't feel as high. So you got to talk to your good dispensary and get the right blend and have it be helpful for you that way. All right, so that's what's going on now. I'm doing this today, and hopefully I'll get some nice rest today. It's going to be gorgeous weather in for the foreseeable future, and there's a delightful meteorologist on NBC, on WNBC is in New York, on WVIT, which is in Hartford. I grew up in New York. I grew up in New York, New Jersey, and I grew up halfway between New York City and Philadelphia. So where we were, we had an antenna on top of our house. That's how old I am. If you turn the antenna towards New York, you could get the New York stations in really well. And if you turn the antenna towards Philly, you get the Philly stations in. We were a little bit closer to Philly, so it was easier to get those in. But the TV and radio stations that were NBC, CBS, and ABC in New York, they are WABC, WNBC, and WCBS, as they are in California, all same, except with a K in the beginning. So, but here, when you're in Northeastern Connecticut, you get the Connecticut station. So you have your ABC is WTNH, your CBS is WFSB, and your NBC is WVIT. So anyway, this meteorologist, Rochelle J, she's on WVIT, and she's delightful. I'm enjoying her, and I'm guessing she's millennialish age because she's very active on social media. So I enjoy seeing her social media, and like if you watch her social media and you comment, she'll say hello to you. So and she'll do a Facebook Live while she's broadcasting and stand in front, and you get to see her stand in front of the green screen. There's nothing on the green screen. How do they do that? I don't know. But it's delightful. Anyway, she does this very funny thing. When it's gorgeous weather, she says the meteorological complaint department will be closed today. And so she posted yesterday that the meteorological complaint department will be closed for the foreseeable future. We'll see you next time. And to the point where she actually says, the weather's getting kind of boring now. And I'm like, look, we're happy to hear you say the weather is gorgeous today. It's really fine. And it's fine if you say it, and we enjoy hearing it from you, and it's totally okay. So anyway, so we're going to have some really gorgeous weather. It is going to get hot again, and then probably the temperature will drop after it gets hot again. And that may be it for hot. But it's been very pleasant having these cool nights, these 40, 50 degree nights. It's good sleeping weather, especially for me, not so much for Ron, but especially for me, because if you want to sleep well, you need a cool room. And I think the magic number is 65 degrees or below. I don't know how Ron sleeps in set. Like when I go to my mother's house and she's got the thermostat set to the 70s, it's tough. You know, we have to, I have to put the fan on high, and it's hard. So anyway, and she's at a place where she's not getting night sweats and hot flashes anymore. And I'm still a little sweaty in that peri-postmenopausal thing. Okay, so let's talk about what we've been talking about. We were talking about fat loss, and I want to tell you about what I tell my patients in terms of how to lose fat. And the main thing about how to lose fat is you shouldn't worry about losing fat. So I may have said this before. Anyway, before I do that, I wanted to tell you about Don't Weigh Me cards. So this is interesting. So some people carry Don't Weigh Me cards, and they help patients avoid being triggered at the doctor's office. So they had someone, they talk about in this article, they talk about somebody who has an eating disorder. When they get routinely weighed, it causes a bunch of unnecessary stress. And they had heard somewhere that you could refuse to tell them you didn't want to be weighed, but felt intimidated to say it out loud. But now this person has a card, and when she met with her doctor, she hands the card to the doctor and says she doesn't want to be weighed. And the office was familiar with the card, so they said, "Sure, no worries. I won't weigh you." So Ginny Jones created Don't Weigh Me cards in 2019 and estimates that it's actually the third time they've gone viral on Twitter, which shows their enduring appeal. You can order the packs on her site if you want to. And this Ginny Jones, she had recovered from a lifelong eating disorder. So you can look at the Don't Weigh Me cards and you can get some if you want to. So being preoccupied with weight is a symptom for many people with eating disorders. So being reminded of your weight or being asked to step on a scale can be triggering for those in recovery. And Ginny Jones, who is the founder of the eating disorder resource morelove.org, began asking not to be weighed at doctor's appointments as part of her recovery, but not realized that not everyone knew that that was an option. Let me make this clear. If you're in a doctor's office and they want to do any sort of procedure, examination, or lab, you can decline. They are not in charge of you. Anything that we do, if the patient says, "I don't want to do that," you can't do it to them. Even if you think they're going to die, the only time you can do something without a patient's consent is if they're not conscious. If they are conscious and they are saying, "No, don't do this to me," you can't. That's the way it goes. So if the patient walks in and says, "I don't want to be weighed," you can't weigh them. But for me, with my patients, I'm very sensitive to that. I will ask a patient directly to please get on the scale. And if they groan or make noise, I say to them, "Would you like to either for me to not tell you what you weigh, so I'll have you turn around, or would you like to not be weighed?" And whatever they ask me for, I let it ride. I offer them whatever they want and tell them it's totally okay. Because the number on the scale is not as important as what they're doing for their health or with their health. It really isn't. And if they feel triggered by that number, they don't need to know it. And if they go so far as to say, "Don't weigh me at all," so you note it in the chart, the patient didn't want to be weighed, and that's it. And you don't necessarily have that metric, which is fine. It can be a concern if you're trying to give them a dose of a medicine. But I mean, based on a person's body habitus, you can decide how much medicine that you want them to have. And then, even with a person's body habitus, everybody's metabolism is different and people respond differently to different compounds, whether they're herbal or vitamins or minerals or any sort of pharmaceutical. People can be very sensitive to medications or anything that they put in their body. As we found out that if I have one cup of hibiscus tea, I wake up the next morning not wanting to wake up the next morning. So we're not going to do that anymore. Anyway, I'm not skinny. I'm what I'd call chubby. If you want to know my BMI, is in the overweight range and, I'm not in the obese range. I'm very sensitive to certain medications, and I was very sensitive to a blood pressure medication at a very tiny dose. And so there are biological factors that cause that. So for some people, whether or not they have an eating disorder, the thought of being weighed at the doctor's office can cause enough anxiety to keep them from getting the medical care they need and deserve. Some people won't go in. That's especially true with people at higher weights who are often given weight-based stigmas in medical settings. And it's the first thing we do when we step into a doctor's office. We hop on a scale. That Jeff Hunger says this. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Miami University. So rather than setting the tone of the appointment with our health behaviors, our mental health, or chronic illnesses, everything is primed with weight. It's true. If the first thing you do is, it's true. When I go to Dr. LaGuardia's office, first thing they do is put me on the scale. And it's a little nerve-wracking. But I let them do it because I don't weigh myself otherwise, so I want to see where I'm at. So being weighed on its own isn't necessarily an instance of weight stigma. It does open the door for centering the conversation around weight, whose research focuses on the consequences of weight stigma. If it brings to mind their weight in this specific environment, it's going to make them concerned about what's the doctor going to say about this number. So that anxiety is what maybe drives people to avoid healthcare altogether. He continued, down the line, that can lead to worsening health conditions and delayed diagnoses. In Donovan's case, she experienced chronic knee pain for more than a decade, but when she asked the doctors about it, they just tell her she needed to lose weight. And she felt so dismissed for so long because there was such a focus on that one thing that this one solution will magically fix everything. I think that's ridiculous. If somebody comes in pain, you treat the pain where they're at now. You can't count on a person losing weight. Why? Because fat loss is neither linear, fair, nor predictable. They can starve themselves and not lose weight. That's just a thing that you see. So if somebody's in distress now and you don't help them, I don't think you're doing your job. You have to help a person who's in distress. Somebody who's hurting, you help them with their knee pain. Because they're not going to be able to lose 10 pounds next week unless they starve themselves and make themselves sick. And there's no reason to do that. So we have this Ms. Donovan's primary care provider, Dr. Weisler, said her office started offering the cards over a year ago and was introduced to them by a therapist that the practice partners with. And in the practice, the patient gets asked whether or not they want to be weighed today, with or without the cards. If it's necessary to get their weight, the patient may have an option to turn around so they don't see the number. That's what I do. And it isn't comfortable with it, and the cards help facilitate that. Patients have really appreciated it. It almost instantly creates that connection, that environment where they do feel safe. So I probably should just say, instead, if I want to take a person's height, I'd like to take your height today, and is it okay if I weigh you? And if they say, I don't want to be weighed today, I say, is it okay if I weigh you and not tell you the number? And if they say no, then that's it. I'm not going to do it. So dissociating weight and health is a positive step for overall well-being. The card's enduring popularity is a sign that so many people are avoiding going to medical appointments or feeling incredible stress and anxiety leading into medical appointments. Ginny Jones knows this personally, but seeing the demand for the cards really says that we have a major issue with weight stigma in our healthcare system, and it's negatively impacting people's health. The cards can be a great tool in starting a conversation about the need to dissociate our concept of health from weight. So Bracha Kopsik is a registered dietitian who works with children and teens. She uses those cards as well as More Loves, Please Don't Talk About My Child's Weight cards to start discussions with clients and patients about unhelpful comments kids may receive regarding their weight at doctor's appointments. Because doctors carry so much authority in kids' lives, a comments about needing to eat fewer sweets, for instance, may stick in children's minds and contribute to damaging thoughts around foods and bodies, Kopsik explained. When the conversation around weight influences how kids or teens are eating negatively and problematically, it really shows how risky it is to talk about weight or even the child's weight necessarily. Instead, the focus should be on helping the clients to develop health-promoting behaviors like eating a variety of foods, finding forms of movement they enjoy, managing stress effectively, and getting quality sleep without emphasizing weights. If you do those things, you're going to be healthy overall, whether or not you lose weight, and you probably will lose some weight. But the focus should not be on the actual number on the scale. We're really trained to believe that weight and health are the same thing, and by losing weight, we can improve our health. And it's not true. You can be unhealthy and slender, and you can be very healthy and large. So I think we really need to have a conversation about what health is and what is weight, but being very clear that they're not the same thing. In so many cases, being weighed at every appointment is simply what Jones calls a medical ritual, and if it's causing stress, then we don't have to follow the ritual just for the sake of the ritual. Nobody has needed my weight since I've started not being weighed. It's not actually been a problem. And they tell you to do it, and you do it, and you've done it for so many years, you don't necessarily stop to question it, even if it makes you feel bad. The goal is not necessary for no one to be weighed ever. It's about understanding what's considered a routine event at a doctor's appointment can actually cause harm. Allowing patients to request not to be weighed or even opt into being weighed rather than opting out, like in Weisler's office, is one small but impactful way to make doctor's offices more inclusive and welcoming space for people in all bodies. Other things providers can do is make sure the seating in the waiting room accommodates a range of body sizes, with and without armrests, for example, having a variety sizes of blood pressure cuffs, which I do, and stocking gowns for larger body sizes. My gowns are all really big. They err on the side of large. And it's very much about what kinds of visual clues and physical clues are happening that make people know that when they walk in, their body is considered. Practitioners may not realize what an impact these simple changes can have on their patients, but Hanfield says it's a surprisingly great way to build the kind of honest, trusting rapport doctors are looking to develop with patients. Even a tool as simple as the "Please Don't Weigh Me" cards can stimulate a discussion about the impact of weight stigma in a patient's life that can really be a game changer for how a person understands or cares for their health. You want to advocate for the patient and help them to feel comfortable, because when you go to the doctor's office, you should feel comfortable. You should feel like you want to go there. If you go to my office, I had a massage table that I wasn't using for a long time. I used to do the Bowen technique, and I don't generally do it anymore. I have the massage table set to the side now. I got a great big beanbag chair. So far, the only people that have sat in the beanbag chair is me, my staff, and kids. I haven't had an adult use the beanbag chair, but they are welcome to use it if they want to. And so I got it mostly for me, so it would encourage me to lie down in a comfortable position and do some deep breathing and de-stress myself at points during the day. Have I done that yet? Not so much. Because I used to lie on the massage table, and the massage table, I started to associate that, oh, if I'm lying on this massage table, that means that something is wrong. The beanbag chair is cozy. The other thing I did is I have a main chair that, like a big chair that's covered in leather or fake leather, I'm not sure. And that's the chair, I call that the throne, and that's where the patient the actual patient sits. So if other people are in with the patient, I have a couple of other chairs for them to sit in. And I got, a young girl came in and she grabbed one of my foam rollers and she set it up on its end and put her feet up on it. And I said, oh, look at that. I have to get an ottoman because she wants to put her feet up. And mom told the girl, you should really take your feet off that. You shouldn't be using it. And I said, no, mom, you discipline your child any way you want to, but I don't mind that she's doing that. I'm just noting that she's putting her feet up and it might be nice if I also had an ottoman. So I got an ottoman and I noticed that most people don't use it. Some people do, but most people don't use it. It's just a cute little plushy ottoman that you can put your feet up on, and it's sage colored. And Carrie, one of my office staff, she picked out the color and she wanted the sage. She liked it because it was comforting. Anyway, when you go into the doctor's office, I think you should feel comfortable. I remember a few years ago, a mom came in with her kids. These kids are all grown now and they're all, you know, off in college and doing different things. And one is an apprentice and one's off in college. Anyway, this mom came in and said, look, it's kind of hard for me to come into your office because my kids are so comfortable here that they start playing and then they misbehave. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? I mean, the building was somebody's house at one time. It's an old farmhouse that's been refurbished. And, you know, it has real wood floors and we've set it up to be cozy. You know, we have nice rugs on the floor that get cleaned very regularly. Thank you, Michelle. And so it is a cozy, comfortable place, and it's an old farmhouse. So we want you to, when you come in, we want you to feel comfortable and cozy and like you can just be yourself and tell me your story and like that. So anyway, so that's it. So this is an interesting concept that you can request to not be weighed at your doctor's office. You can carry a please don't weigh me card, and a kind doctor will accommodate you. And I, Fran, should probably be saying to my patients, is it okay? Instead of saying, come on over to the scale, I'll weigh you, I should say to the patient, is it okay if I weigh you today? Because I'll say, come on over to the scale, and then the patient has to contradict me by saying, I don't want to be weighed today. So better I shouldn't ask them. I just realized that the vacuum cleaner is in view. I'm going to move it. So if you're watching me on Instagram or Facebook Live, the vacuum is, you can see the vacuum cleaner. I'm going to push it out of the way. So pardon me while I do this. Okay, there it is. Hopefully it won't fall over. It's leaning against the table. Okay, got it. All right, so let's talk about some more stuff. I wanted to tell you what I usually talk to my patients about with fat loss. So the first thing that I say to my patients, and forgive me if I have said this before, is have you seen the movie Fight Club? Yes, no. And if they say yes, then if they say no, I have to explain it. But if they say yes, what's the first rule of Fight Club? The first rule of Fight Club is don't talk about Fight Club. And if you're not sure what that means, is there was this movie Fight Club a number of years ago. And on Fight Club, Edward Norton was in this movie with Brad Pitt. And Brad Pitt turned out to be a figment of his imagination. Oh, wait, spoiler. Brad Pitt was a figment of his imagination. But anyway, Brad Pitt, Edward Norton was playing a character who was kind of a nebbish. He was a person, just a boring middle-aged guy with a boring middle-aged office job. And in order to feel more intense about his life, he created Fight Club. So guys like him would all gather in a warehouse and they'd fight each other and they'd hit each other really hard and they'd wind up bleeding. And that was a big deal. And he became a hero, an anti-hero hero, and that was Fight Club. So the first rule of Fight Club was you don't talk about Fight Club. So what's the first rule of weight loss? You don't talk about weight loss. That sounds crazy, right? And the whole thing is that line that my colleague Jay Tita said to me, that weight loss is neither linear, fair, nor predictable. That you can do everything right this week and not lose weight. To wit, what happened with people, when the Biggest Loser used to be on, you would have women who had done everything right and maybe lose 1 or 2 pounds. And the way that you won on The Biggest Loser was winning, it was losing the most amount of weight. And so the weight was the key. And so they would do things like starve themselves, over-exercise and sweat and become dehydrated so that when they get on the scale, the number would be lower, which is terrible. When I was an adolescent, I used to do that. I used to water starve myself so the scale would read lower and I would occasionally faint. I don't do that anymore. In fact, I'm realizing usually I bring a glass of water in during my show, and I forgot to do that. And so the thing is, as soon as I'm done making the show, I'll go and have a protein shake and some water, and I'll be okay. But I do not do that anymore. I hydrate. I always have water around, and I'm always sipping on it. And I get it, if I'm the least little bit thirsty, I drink something, and I drink throughout the day. I never do that again. So you can do everything right on a given week and maybe not lose weight. So why focus on the weight? Why make people crazy? Making people crazy about the number on the scale, as we talked about with the Don't Weigh Me cards, it just upsets people and triggers. There's so many people come in and they're triggered by the number on the scale and they don't want to know it. And so how important is it really? Because the thing is, you can't lose weight tomorrow. You can't say, all right, tomorrow I'm going to lose weight. You don't know if you are going to lose weight or not. You might do everything right and nothing happens. But what you can do tomorrow is eat healthy food, is eat food that doesn't have additives or preservatives in it. Resolve to eat a whole foods diet. And tomorrow I'm going to have oatmeal for breakfast with fruit and nuts and seeds in it. And I'm going to have turkey breast in a sandwich on whole grain bread with veggies for lunch. And I'm going to have salad and salmon for dinner. You know, I'm going to have a real healthy day and I'm going to drink lots of water and I'm going to get some exercise. I'm going to do some stretching or yoga or walking or whatever your thing is. And those are things that you can do tomorrow and celebrate, and they will make you feel good right away. If you spend 2 weeks eating nothing but whole foods, after 2 weeks, you're going to feel a lot better. That's only 2 weeks. Really, you might feel better after a week. If you set aside things like caffeine, sugar, alcohol, processed food, never mind about the weight, you will probably feel better in a few days and certainly by about 2 weeks if you're not eating any food intolerances. And so that's something to celebrate, and that's something you can journal, you can write it down, you can focus on your progress, you can look at it, and you can get those metrics right now. When you track, there's a lot of studies on tracking, when you track your food, when you track your exercise, when you track your, when you track food, exercise, when you track your water consumption, people tend to be more successful when they track because they're able to look at and celebrate what their accomplishments, and you have a record of it. So there are lovely apps that you can use for that. You can use MyFitnessPal. You can use Lose It. You can go on Weight Watchers, which is now WW. You can go on Noom. There's all kinds of systems that you can use. And there's lots of apps that you can use where you can track your exercise and your fitness. And then there's apps that actually track your workouts from a device. So using your heart rate and your ambulation. So things like Strava, or you could go on Zwift, and Zwift will dump into Strava. And Zwift is a virtual bicycling and walking running app that you, where you have a smart bike or a smart treadmill, and it records how many steps and miles that you have done. And so when you have metrics like that, you can feel good about that, and you can feel good about that today. Tomorrow I'm going to ride my bike 35. I'm not going to do that tomorrow, but tomorrow I'm going to go for a 25-mile bike ride. And then you do it, and look, you did a 25-mile bike ride. And there it is on Strava. And if it's not, if you didn't record it, it's okay. We still know you did it. You could write it down and I'll still believe you. But, you know, it's like, if you don't take a picture of it, did it really happen? Or if you don't, record it on Strava, did it really happen? That, you know, those are silly things. If you know you did it and you feel better for doing it, I mean, if my patient tells me something, I have to assume it's true. I also have to assume that my patients don't always tell me the truth, and that's okay. But you can't do anything about when a patient is not honest with you. You have to, and usually they generally are, I think, but I have to realize that they're not always. I mean, when we used to watch Dr. House back in the early aughts, one of his main things to say was that patients lie. That's one of the premier things about patients, that they come in and they don't tell you the truth. And it's not because they're dishonest or mean. It's because they're embarrassed. You know, they want to please the doctor. When you go into the doctor's office, they want the doctor to be pleased with them, and they don't want to be yelled at, and they don't want to be contradicted or upset. So if you're eating a bunch of sugar, you may be not too excited about telling the doctor that. And it depends on how much compassion the doctor treats you with. And I really try to work on that, because I eat sugar, I drink caffeine. I have to really watch it. It's not so good for me to do those things. But, you know, I'm not a person who, I wouldn't consider myself orthorexic. If there's something I want to eat, I generally eat it. Although, unless it's a real food intolerance, like I basically learned that real ice cream is not a thing I'm going to be able to eat anytime soon. And real yogurt, real cheese, it's really unfortunate. That maybe I can have a bite once in a while, and then my dairy has to be limited to occasional butter, and that's pretty much it. Because I get sick, I get symptoms. Gluten, I can eat little bits of. I don't, like when I buy bread for the house, Ron can't eat it anyway, so I buy gluten-free bread. If I buy pastries generally for the house, they're going to be gluten-free. If I happen to have a gluten pastry out, I probably won't finish it. I'll bring it home, and then I generally don't finish it at the house, and it winds up going away because I'm nervous to eat it again. It's better if I don't eat gluten. It's better if I don't eat refined starch and refined sugar, and I know that just about how I feel. So anyway, I try to make patients feel comfortable about their bodies and who they are and where they're at, and let them know that they are, that our goal is to get them happy and healthy, not to get them to a certain weight. Although people do come in wanting to lose weight, and I give them a handout, and so I'll give you some highlights from that handout. So what are the first two things on the handout? Are stress reduction and stress reduction. So stress reduction helps you to lose weight. So when you have increased stress, it increases cortisol. And then I have people come in and say, I'm not stressed. They're you know, doing a million things. They're taking care, they're caregiving children, parents, working a job. They're not getting enough sleep. I'm not stressed. And they really say that to me. And I have to explain to them, okay, stress is not necessary. Even there's even good stress. I mean, if you're planning a wedding, that's stressful, but it's good stress because you're happy about it. It's just anytime you do anything that increases your cortisol. If you go out for a joyous bike ride where you climb some hills, you're not going to get up the hills unless you kick out some cortisol. If you're on a flat ride and you go fast on that flat ride, you're not going to go fast unless you kick out some cortisol. So doing joyous things, you still can have a lot of cortisol. That's not the same thing as being in a reclined position or a relaxed position and doing deep breathing. It's just not. We're, you know, deep breathing directly lowers cortisol, which is why we tell you stress reduction. So cortisol is a hormone that's made in your adrenal glands, those glands that are just above your kidneys. It's present. Cortisol is present in fight or flight. Its job is to break down tissue in your body and put sugar into your blood so you can escape danger. That was originally what cortisol was for. If you are doing anything, you know, I'm sitting here making radio naturopath, right? My cortisol is higher right now than it will be later today when I do my yin yoga. Absolutely. Or when I'm lying down reading my book for pleasure. So when you raise cortisol, cortisol's job is to dump sugar into your blood so that you have energy to do whatever it is you're going to do. And if you don't use the sugar in your blood, it gets stored as fat, mostly in your abdomen, which leads to the next time. So anyway, one of the problems people have is they have sedentary lives or sedentary jobs. So their jobs involve sitting at a computer, doing a lot of typing, and sitting for long hours while stressed. And my statement is that they're sitting in a cortisol bath. So when you sit in a cortisol bath, you're not able to use the sugar that the cortisol is dumping into your blood so that you can get up the hill or go down the road or, muck the stalls or whatever it is you're doing. If you're sitting at a computer, the cortisol's there and it's dumping sugar into your blood and you're not using it, so it gets stored as fat. So how do you lower your cortisol? It's hard. So one of the things to do is if you do have a job where you sit at a computer, you have to take breaks during the day. Take the breaks during the day where you rest, you go for a leisure walk in nature, you lie down on your beanbag chair and do some deep breathing. You do yin yoga in your office or in your home if you're working from home. There are all kinds of things you could do to interrupt your day so you're not sitting in a cortisol bath the whole day. And you can also engage in some deep breathing while you're on the computer, and that can be helpful too. Deep breathing, where you take a breath in and you exhale for longer than you inhaled for, lowers cortisol. It lowers cortisol immediately. So it's something to do very regularly. So restorative activities are any activities that lower cortisol. And they are one of the most important things to do to lose weight. They are also one of the most important things to do for your health of any kind. If you have increased cortisol, increased stress, doesn't matter what your condition is, whether it's cancer, the common cold, COVID, pain, musculoskeletal pain, back pain, a upset tummy, headaches, doesn't matter what it is. If you lower cortisol, you're going to feel better. So doing less stuff. One of the restorative activities is to do less stuff. Are there things that you can stop doing? Are there things that you can that need to get done that you can delegate, get somebody else to do them? Can you do some things in a less stressful way? And then there are actual things that have nothing to do with the actual activity that's stressful for you, but things that you can do that are restorative activities that you can do. So taking naps, leisure walks in nature, spiritual practices, church, temple, synagogue, meditation, whatever it is for you. Exercise of any kind is ultimately stress reducing. Even if it's, you need cortisol to power lift. You need cortisol to do weightlifting. You need cortisol to climb a hill when you're walking or riding a bike. You need cortisol to get across the pool. But when you increase that cortisol, generally you're going to lose the sugar. Now, if you do long cardio, long steady state cardio at a medium level, you are then sitting in a cortisol bath for a long period of time without a break, and that can cause weight gains. That's why we see long distance cyclists who are chubby. People who cycle who are slender tend to do more interval type training, and you know where they will they'll climb some hills and they'll go down some hills, or they'll do some interval training, and they don't ride every single day. when doing long, slow, or long, medium cardio is actually not good for you in terms of fat loss. That you either want to do a shorter workout that has intervals in it, or you want to do a medium length, low intensity workout. So low intensity workouts, like a leisure walk in nature where you don't care about the pace, that actually lowers cortisol. But that middle ground where you're doing long cardio for a long time, that doesn't lower cortisol. So you know, I used to do a lot of sentry rides, and I don't do them so much anymore. My body is just, I'm in a place where that's just not something I can do right now. You know, and at this age, it's harder to maintain a lower weight. So, you know, and the things that I would need to do is reduce more stress and reduce more sugar. That, and then I might sit at a lower weight, and I might not. I don't know. And focusing on it makes me nuts, so I don't. And what I try to focus on is keeping myself as healthy as possible. So other things you can do, yoga, any kind of yoga, whether it's vinyasa yoga, a power yoga, or even, of course, yin yoga and restorative yoga. Those are my two favorites because they involve being very still and doing a lot of deep breathing. Anything that has you doing a lot of deep breathing is going to help you to lower cortisol. And if you stretch regularly, you're not going to be as sore. Your body's just going to feel better. Pain raises cortisol. If there's anything you can do to reduce pain, that's always a good thing. Any stretching that's not necessarily yoga. It doesn't have to be yoga. If you have a thing about not doing yoga, then please just stretch. Deep breathing, as we said, and basic breathing techniques, like I talked about, that 6-second breathe in for 6 seconds, breathe out for 6 seconds. Find an app and follow the app or a YouTube, and find that and follow it, and it will help you to stay in that 6-second cycle. And then you can do box breathing, where in for four, hold for four, out for four, I'll hold for four. And there are apps that will show you that as well. There's also numbers that help you to breathe in for less time than you breathe out. So you breathe in for 4 seconds, hold for 2 seconds, and exhale for 6 seconds. Or you can breathe in for 4 seconds, hold for four, and exhale for eight. That kind of thing. When I'm taking Angie's class over at Yono, she will sometimes have us breathe in for, you know, four to eight, and then exhale. And she'll get us down to like 16, which is hard to do because you have to make sure you have enough breath so that you can exhale for 16 seconds. But exhaling for a long period of time really helps to lower cortisol. And so that you can do just breathing. It doesn't have to be a specific practice. Tai Chi is very slow. Tai Chi is actually, the idea that Tai Chi is slow and meditative, that's only basically the yang form of Tai Chi is the slow and meditative kind. There are other forms of Tai Chi. Tai Chi is a martial art, so not all Tai Chi is slow and meditative. But the one that we tend to do in the United States, where you're doing a regenerative, gentle Tai Chi that's meditative, that's the yang style of Tai Chi. So when you see them in the park doing the real slow paragraphs of Tai Chi, that's yang style, and that's very meditative, and it can help to strengthen you because you get into your hips and your quads a lot. And then there's Qigong. Qigong is another one that I like. Qigong, the focus is even more on the breath. The movements are to encourage the lungs to open up. And you can find Qigong. There are local teachers for Qigong, and you can also, once again, go on YouTube and find teachers and do Qigong there. Doing crafts, if you feel relaxed by doing crafts, knitting or art or crocheting or scrapbooking or doing photography, anything like that can be very stress reducing. Playing video games, depending on the video game, can be stress reducing or not, depending on what it is. It's a video game that has a lot of skill and some violence and stuff. I don't think that's so stress reducing. Video games, on the one hand, can be relaxing. On the other hand, they may not be. And the concern is that you're looking at screens. When you're looking at screens, screens are stressful because when you're looking at a screen, hello, me on the screen, I'm looking at my computer as well. Screens are pixelated, so you're not looking at a static image. Whereas when I look at, when I look at a piece of paper, this is a piece of paper, it says what it says, and it's still, and my eyes don't have to adjust, keep adjusting to try to see what this says. But when you're looking at a screen, I mean, I'm using a screen to read off of. You can't see this. It doesn't really show. But when I use the screen, there are pixels there. So my eyes have to keep adjusting. The pixels are not entirely static. And your eyes are always resolving to try to see what they're looking at. So it's actually very stressful on your eyes and your optic nerve and your brain to be staring at screens all the time. And that's why it's really good to take breaks from screens during a work day. And what I recommend is if people are stressed and they like to read, do things analog. That's where, if you don't want to buy a lot of books, you can go to your public library. That's one of the things that, well, you know, when I started with my long back syndrome, one of the things to reduce stress is I rediscovered the library because you didn't have to buy the books. And you could go to the library and pick out a book. Now it's an exciting thing to go to the library, say hello to the librarians. You pick out a new book. You get to take it home. You get to read it. It's really cool. And because you're looking at paper, the paper is relaxing. Screens tend to suck you in. If you notice, when you're playing a video game, you just keep playing it and playing it. And you have to drag yourself away from it to go do something else. Whereas if you're reading a book, after a while, you might get sleepy. And certainly if it's the end of the day and it's the last thing you're doing some reading before bed, you're looking at the book, and after a while, your eyes get heavy and your body tells you, all right, I'm done. And you can put the book down and that's it, which is really great. Just reading paper books is a way to reduce cortisol and reduce your stress. Playing with children. So if you're a parent or a grandparent, playing with your kids can be helpful. If you're not and you want time with children, you can certainly babysit or volunteer at preschools or, look out for your nephews or nieces or watch your neighbor's kids. There's different ways that you can interact with children in a healthy way. Just cuddling, snuggling, and intimacy with your partner. If you don't have a partner, then you could have a pet, and pets all by themselves are another way to lower cortisol. They can be stressful, especially when you're first acclimating to them, but ultimately it's worth it because generally pets are stress reducing. I always experience stress reduction when I'm around animals. And you know that pets for stress reduction, you know what the best pet is for stress reduction? It's the same exercise that's good for you. It's the one you'll do. So having a fish, having a turtle, having a tarantula, having a snake, having a dog, having a cat, they are all stress reducing because you're fascinated by the creature, you're caring for the creature, you're paying attention to the creature, and paying attention to the creatures is stress reducing. Of course, if you have a misbehaving dog or cat, that of course can be stressful. But if you get to the point where you're in harmony with the dog or cat, and the dog or cat loves you, and you love the dog or cat, and you have a life with them, it's definitely stress reducing. I mean, I feel very blessed that I get to go to the store's farmer's market, and everybody chooses to bring their dogs, and they encourage you to interact with the dog. Part of the reason they're bringing them is because they like to show them off, but it's also because it's socializing the dog. They want the dog to get used to being around people. And so big shout out to Kira, one of my favorite dogs at the store's farmer's market. Kimberly brings Kira in, and Kira is this adorable dog. I'm not sure what exact breed she is. She's large and she's reddish and she's wire-haired. So she has a wire-haired coat, and she has those wire hairs coming out of her forehead. So, and the whole coat is reddish, except the wire hairs around her eyes are blonde. So I joke with Kimberly that she has blonde highlights, and I mentioned that while someone else was petting her, and I said, "Do you see she has blonde highlights? How cool is that?" And we wanted to know from Kimberly if she has them done. And we asked her, she said, no, she's all natural. We're all natural girls. And no, those are her very own blonde highlights. Although we know that people do. If you go on Instagram or TikTok, you will find animals who get dyed with all kinds of things. They make them to look like leopards, or they make them to put peace and love signs and flowers. And, just like they color your hair in fashion colors. They do their dogs up that way too. So anyway, Kira's not that way. So anyway, pets, animals are stress reducing. If you don't have a pet and you want to interact with pets, one way, one thing is to go to the store's farmer's market. Another is to go to the Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross race because everybody brought their dogs there. And that was fun to see all the dogs yesterday. And the other thing is to go and volunteer at an animal shelter. And then you get to interact with the dogs without bringing them home, if there's a way that you can do that. So laughing is good for you. So watching a funny movie, hanging out with a friend and laughing, reading funny stories, reading funny books, watching a funny TV show, anything that's really funny that gets you laughing. Laughing, the act of laughing itself reduces cortisol. So does crying. If you allow yourself to cry, if you need to cry, crying actually relieves cortisol too. But getting yourself to laugh is fun. You know, it's enjoyable and people like to laugh. And people like funny things. I like funny things. And I try to sometimes make my patients laugh. The thing about comedy is you have to have timing. And sometimes, you know, I think when you grow up Eastern European Jewish, you grow up with an appreciation of comedy. And comedy is a way to, we didn't have it easy in Eastern Europe. So learning to laugh is a survival strategy. And you'll find that a lot of comedians have dark pasts and they've learned to use comedy as a survival strategy. So, and aside from laughing, time with friends, whether you're laughing or not, is stress reducing. It helps to lower cortisol. So spending time with people. If you don't have friends nearby, just going and sitting in the cafe and saying hello to people, or, you know, what we do is we go to the Willimantic Food Co-op. If you go sit in the Willimantic Food Co-op, they have a place in the front where you can sit and have a snack or coffee, and they have inexpensive coffee and tea in the front, and you can have a snack or not. And you can just sit there and you can read a book. They have Wi-Fi. You can use your computer or your phone. And if you sit there, you will see people you know, and they'll come over and say hello to you. And so that way, if you can't... if you don't have any friends nearby, then going to a cafe or going to a place where people go, you'll see people there and you could talk to them. Music of any kind, whatever kind of music is stress reducing to you. And, you know, one person's horror is another person's joy. So I may love the Foo Fighters. You may not. I do love the Foo Fighters. And I joke that David Grohl's my other boyfriend. And I have a thing for, I don't know, 90s hard rock. I like the Foo Fighters and I like Green Day. I like The Offspring. That sound appeals to me. And I mean, I have a wide variety of tastes, but I do enjoy that kind of rock, especially when I'm working out hard. And so whatever kind of music, but for yoga, I like to have really calm, ambient, restorative music. Anything that calms you that I haven't mentioned, getting rest, stopping what you're doing and just resting and just doing nothing is stress reducing. So that's the beginning. So the most important thing for fat loss is stress reduction, and that's what I focused on. And I have a whole bunch of other things to talk about here that related to fat loss, which I'll get to next week. So, but I have to go now because it's time. So let me let you go. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores and WHUS.org.